Will Rogers once said, "If there are no dogs in heaven, then when I die, I want to go where they went." Welcome to episode 11 of Our Hen House, a place to find our way to change the world for animals. In today's episode, Marianne and I will share some personal news pertaining to the legal status of our relationship.
It's unconstitutional for you to be legal.
Then we'll get over ourselves and we'll discuss the new term that the Boston Globe coined as an effort to label ethical men. We'll then be joined by the effervescent Marisa Miller-Wolfson of Kind Green Planet, who will tell us all about her revolutionary online coaching program, Vegan at Heart.
You've got to have heart.
Following that, as part of our religion and spirituality series, we'll be talking with Calla Wright and Nick Lachetti about how Christianity directly corresponds to animal rights.
Good Lord!
In our news section, we'll be discussing an unusual animal who is out and about and creating quite the stir just a few blocks from our apartment here in New York City. We'll also tell you about a potentially exciting new channel that National Geographic is launching, focusing on wild animals. Finally, we'll let you in on our favorite ever Passover cookbook, minus the schmaltz, of course.
No schmaltz, no problem.
That and more today on our podcast.
I can't wait.
My name is Jasmine Singer, and I'll be your co-host today in our hen house.
Woo, yeah, Jasmine!
Along with my legal eagle, Marianne Sullivan. Now please, pull up some hay. Let's get squawking. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Marianne Sullivan.
Hello, my little domestic partner. Or should I say domestic terrorist?
Or domestic terrorist partner. Because we became domestic partners this week.
Yes, for whatever that means. And we're not actually sure what it means. But we are. We registered.
I think that it partially means that if one of us was in the hospital, then the other one would be able to see the other one as family.
Yes, I think New York City law requires that at least New York City hospitals respect the domestic partner agreement.
So if we ever wind up in a hospital, we have to make sure it's in New York City.
Yes.
It was actually kind of funny because we were becoming domestic partners. We went to the courthouse.
It wasn't really the courthouse. It was the city clerk's office, which is in the old Motor Vehicle Bureau office, which seemed odd. I felt like I was registering a car. Not that I was registering you, honey.
It's not that dissimilar.
Oh, they fixed it all up. It looked great.
And we were the token gays.
Yeah, I think we were the only gay people there.
We were, and there were a lot of people there.
It was the place where people got their marriage licenses.
Right. So we went there, and I thought that we were just going there to have another step in the process on our way to becoming domestic terrorists, partners. And then he just, handed us this certificate. And so I was kind of surprised by the whole thing. And
yeah, it's pretty simple. And I think it's pretty easy to get out of, honey, so don't worry.
Okay, I won't worry. And then we left and we're like, wow, we're domestic partners. And we were happy and we were confused because we didn't really know what the protocol was.
We just didn't know what was going on.
It was
a crazy day.
We were both wearing bride's dresses. No, I'm kidding. We were both wearing tuxes. No, I'm just kidding, too. We were, not at all. And it was, 8 a.m., and I hadn't had really that much coffee yet.
8 a.m., that's such an exaggeration.
What, it was, 8:30? I don't know. But anyway, we're domestic partners now, which means that we're a hair more legal.
Does that mean that I'm going to learn how to cook?
Does that mean that we get free aprons? Or something like that. And as your present, because we became domestic partners and it was our official domestic partner day, I surprised you with tickets to the Big Gay Sing.
Yeah, that was very exciting. I had really wanted to go to that and I was being frugal.
And I was
said,
being...
Well, we better not.
And I was being spendthrifty.
But it was well worth it. It was so much fun.
Is spendthrifty a word? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Well, anyway.
You were being a spendthrift. It's such an odd word because thrifty means to be...
That's true.
Good with
That's why I was confused. But anyway, regardless, it was the Gay Men's Choir. And it was 150 gay men singing Cher and Lady Gaga and West Side Story.
A boy like that will kill your brother.
gayest thing I've ever been to in my life.
It was really fun. And the whole audience sang along very loudly.
Forget that boy, find another.
And with enthusiasm. And there was loads of also drag queens and all sorts of amusing
and there was no line in the women's bathroom, which was another plus of being there. Because, you know, it's true. We are kind of like gay men.
Yeah, our love of the American standard of Broadway show tunes.
It was a really cool evening, though. Yeah, I want to do more gay man things.
Yeah, especially well,
some gay man things. Yeah. But anyway, so happy.
There's a few I would prefer to forgo, but the music, definitely, I love it.
Well,
you
know, even when I thought I was a straight girl, I was a gay man. So I think that that's been like my through line for the last 30 years. Did you know that I found out that a little toddler boy listens to our podcast?
Oh, dear. We better clean up our language.
I cannot say fuck nearly as often as I do. So speaking of men, the Boston Globe just did an article about Higgins.
Yeah, it was a great article about how more and more men are becoming vegan, primarily for health reasons, and they talked a lot about the Rip Esselstein book, The Engine 2 Diet. Rip Esselstein is the firefighter down in Texas who wrote
The Engine 2 Diet.
The Engine 2 Diet about going vegan for
and
your health.
And he's been on Dr. Oz talking about it and lots of other hugely mainstream venues. He's really done great work with it.
So the Boston Globe wrote this great article, and in it they made up a whole new word for male vegans called Higgins. And I think it's just really an interesting phenomenon. I don't know how I quite feel about it.
We talked a little bit about masculinity when Joshua Katcher from The Discerning Brute was on our show a couple weeks ago, and he has very interesting observations and insight about masculinity.
This was definitely related to that conversation.
And then on a completely different level, Carol Adams, who's written a lot about feminist theory and vegetarianism, has a lot to say about masculinity
and meat. Yeah,
actually,
she did some blog, not a blog post, just a Facebook post I just happened to notice about this whole Higgin article. Didn't feel as she thought, felt very positively about it.
Why wouldn't she?
I don't really know what she meant by her Facebook
Carol
post.
Carol Adams, if you're out there, let us know.
Well, she just said it was another manifestation of the sexual politics of meat. And certainly it does demonstrate, I mean, I think I know where she's coming from. It does demonstrate how mainstream society looks on the absence of animals in your diet as evidence that you're a wuss.
Right, because meat is supposed to symbolize the patriarchy.
Well, masculinity and strength and brutality and all of those good things.
We should just have Carol Adams on because obviously she would...
Yeah, she could probably tell us
she could
she
probably make
better
sense. Yeah, probably. But, you know, if they're going to call it Higgins, was it a positive article, actually?
Yeah, it was a really positive article.
Well, hey, you know, that's great.
And I doubt that she would be nearly as offended by Higgins as she would be by... the title of another book, which is coming out soon that I saw, which on a similar kind of theme.
Right, that was that book with that horrible title, Meat is for Pussies. I don't even want to go there. I don't even want to talk about how unbelievably stupid that name is.
Men are very stuck in their, as we spoke about with Josh, in their very limited range of appropriate behaviors that society allows them. So if people are coming up with ways that men can feel comfortable being vegan and seeing it as a good lifestyle and as a sign of strength and masculinity, well, it's hard for me to be against that. Anything that makes anybody stop eating animals, I'm for it. But I just think it's an interesting phenomenon. I think it's another step in the mainstreaming of veganism.
Yeah. Well, we have a really exciting podcast today that I'm super excited about. Our first guest is Marisa Miller-Wolfson, and she just has very cool things to say, so I think we should probably just stop babbling and... go to the interview.
Get somebody intelligent to speak.
Are you saying that I'm not intelligent? I'm your domestic partner right now. You're not allowed to say things like that to me. Or guess what it is? Domestic violence! Let's just transition to Marisa now. Marisa Miller-Wolfson is the outreach director of Kind Green Planet, a nonprofit organization that conducts grassroots outreach on healthy, humane, eco-friendly living. She has collaborated on more than 60 grassroots workshops, panels, and film screenings all across the U.S. and Canada, including the Farm Sanctuary Hoedown and the Taking Action for Animals Conference, both of which were with me. She recently spoke on panels at the New York City Food and Climate Summit and at the Climate Week New York City, which was organized in conjunction with the United Nations Climate Change Summit. She's a founding member of New York City's Food Print Alliance, a coalition of food justice, animal, and environmental advocates who are working together to lower New York City's climate change food print through meaningful food policy. When she isn't busy coaching veg-curious people through her online program, Vegan at Heart, she's busy finishing up a feature-length vegan documentary entitled Vegucated. She is the honored recipient of the Farm Sanctuary Farm Animal Friend Award and has enjoyed squawking with Marianne and I to bring attention to farm animal issues for over 5 years. Welcome to our hen house, Marisa Miller-Wolfson.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being had. We're really excited to have you on. Marisa, obviously we go really far back, and you go really far back with Marianne also, so it's kind of like weird.
Old home here at our hen house.
It is. It's like, welcome to having my BFF on our hen house. So Marisa has been doing some amazing projects
lately.
She's
not just Jasmine's BFF. Oh. She also does some very amazing work.
And she also made me vegan. I guess I could throw that out there. I'm vegan because of the woman on the other end of the call today. So thanks.
I made you, Jasmine Singer.
Yeah, actually, if there's two people who made me, I'm talking to both of them right now. So I will bow in humility and ask you about all of the wonderful projects you are working on. I'm a super big fan of Vegan at Heart. Tell us about Vegan at Heart.
Oh, thank you. Vegan at Heart is a free email coaching program that I designed for people who consider themselves vegan at heart, but who are not necessarily vegan in practice yet. So it's those people who you talk to, like, oh, yeah, I'm totally vegan at heart, or I'm vegan in spirit, but they haven't quite made the leap to vegan, which is also totally fine. I feel like everything is an evolution. Mm-hmm. And this is one way that we can hold people's hands as they make the leap. So sort of the background is that I find that a lot of people don't want to know more about veganism because they don't think they can do it.
You can do it!
And with Vegan at Heart, I try to share resources and information that empowers them to have the information so it doesn't feel so scary to make such a big leap.
I think that's such a great idea. I didn't think I could be vegan. It seemed completely impossible.
But you did it!
And it also just gives people the idea that there are other people out there who want to be vegan and who are having trouble with it. It's not just them.
Exactly. So that people don't feel so alone.
There's really, I don't think, any other program out there like Vegan at Heart, and it's just such an accessible program that it's free, right? It's totally free.
Yeah. Totally
and
free.
How do people sign up for it?
They go to veganatheart.com, and they just send their email, their name, their city and state, and their country. They actually get people from all over the world, and they receive one mission email daily. So for 30 days, I send them one mission that is, says something like, today, your mission is to try out, you know, meat and dairy alternatives or whatever, or today, your mission is to go to happycow.net and look for a health food store near you, or whatever, something that is a resource that's online that will help them be more vegan. After the 30 days, they just get one email a week with another, you know, with further resources and information.
So when it's done, you must hear from a lot of people. What kind of feedback have you gotten?
I love hearing from people. Everybody's made changes, whether it's vegetarian to vegan or meat eater to vegetarian or it's mostly vegan. But just about everybody's made progress, and I love hearing from
That's
them.
Fantastic. So I've totally been wondering, how did you come up with Vegan at Heart in the first place? What was the impetus for this project?
It is so totally unrelated, but there's a website called flylady.net, mm-hmm. and the Fly Lady, I totally copied from the Fly Lady, but I give her credit on the website.
I remember when you were doing Flight Lady, you used to do your life in 10 or 15 minute intervals or something like that.
Oh, I worked with a timer and it revolutionized my life. And I thought it actually worked perfectly with idealists who often get very caught up in the enormity of something or the idea of something and lose a sense of the practical, that tiny little bits of time, tiny little bits of information can add up, and you don't have to get in your head about the enormity of going vegan. So I thought it would be a nice translation so that people don't think that they have to be at their computer for an hour every day researching veganism.
I love that you just take things in such incremental steps and just work with people where they're at. I think that that is probably the key to your success. How did you learn to be such a good communicator?
Oh, thank you. Well, I've had some inspiration from my friend Jasmine, who's an excellent writer.
I hear she's hot, too.
She's so hot.
Marisa and I've been doing workshops together throughout the city and beyond for years now. I don't know. Something about you being blonde and me being brunette. I don't know.
We're a good team. I think we have good chemistry.
But you really
and we have
do.
Fun.
You know, when I'm ready to go into like a radical bitch rant, you just sort of like breathe and communicate with whoever you're talking to in such an accessible, validating way. Like, you know, that thing that we coined, great, validate. That's like your middle name.
Thank you. I try to do that because it's so easy to get caught up in the anger and the judgment and I do sometimes, but we have to remember there was a time when each of us did not know what was going on factory farms and even on, you know, quote-unquote humane farms. We didn't know. So we have to just remember that sense of compassion. And also, while it might be easier for us to go vegan, it might be harder for us to be perfect, you know, environmentally or, you know, having to do with fair trade and so on. So I try not to judge other people because I think, well, they're probably way better in this other area than me. So
I'm actually perfect all around. So that's like a non-issue.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
I'm just kidding. No, I think that that's fantastic. And Vegan at Heart is a project of your larger organization, which is Kind Green Planet. And what else is going on with Kind Green Planet?
Well, we have various programs and services. My boss, Mary Max, runs an action alert list where she sends an email every Tuesday or Wednesday with an event or an alert or, you know, something for animal advocates. And then Joyce Friedman co-runs the Pets for Life NYC program at New York City Animal Care and Control, and she keeps animals out of the shelters by using her social worker skills and troubleshooting people's problems so they don't have to surrender their animals at the shelter. And then we are trying to pass some green food policy in New York City, as you know, because you've been helping us. You've been working, well, I guess, from the very beginning. We were working together on the food print resolution for New York City. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I am finishing up production on this documentary about veganism called Vegucated.
It's called Vegucated now. It used to be called Glass Walls. Whatever happened to my beautiful title, Glass Walls?
Glass Walls. It was particularly brilliant, so brilliant, in fact, that PETA stole it and used it for their Paul McCartney video.
Rose just barked when you said Glass Walls.
She's so annoyed at PETA.
She seriously just decided to bark out of absolute So
solidarity.
Yeah, absolutely. Solidarity. So in Vegucated, you follow around 3 meat eaters and you try and make them educated or vegucated about veganism by exposing them to the health benefits and the environmental reasons for adopting a plant-based diet and, of course, the animal reasons, too. I can't wait for this movie to come out. I'm just really excited about it.
Thank you. Me too.
It was pretty cool that 2 animal rights films were at the Oscars this year in Best Documentary.
I know. I was at an Oscar party, and my friend started fast-forwarding through the Cove speech, and I was like, no!
It's really interesting timing for you. I bet that that'll actually, the fact that the Cove and Food Inc. got so much notoriety, I bet that that will really help your film.
Oh, everything in the media helps. The fact that Oprah, you know, is so becoming more and more vegan friendly. The fact that Ellen has somebody vegan on every month is huge. I've noticed a big difference just in since I started filming the project. We won't say how long ago.
Dinosaurs roamed the earth.
I was a toddler, actually.
We both look very young.
I'm in a scene in the movie with Marisa, and I have no tattoos.
But you're very cute. You're very good in the last scene. But no, I've noticed a big difference just in terms of the people just knowing the word, even, and my friends having tried it. Tried veganism, heard about it, blah, blah, blah. We've reached the tipping point, not in terms of getting people to go vegan, but in terms of getting people to recognize that veganism exists, what it is, and also some of the reasons why people are vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an exciting time.
Yeah, I think that it's just an amazing difference in the way people react I attribute it largely to Ellen. So there's the Oprah factor as well.
And speaking of the Oprah factor, you had some very exciting news this week in the world of Oprah, where Leanne Hilgart-Meyer, who is the owner and founder of the Vote Couture Company, she did something really cool in her coverage on Oprah.com. What did she do?
Plugged Vegan at Heart. She's been a fan of Vegan at Heart, and she plugged it in this article about compassionate fashion on Oprah.com.
That is so cool. You've kind of, sort of, not really, but kind of been on Oprah.
I doubt Oprah's even seen this.
I bet Oprah is signing up for Vegan at Heart as we speak.
She's doing her first mission.
She is.
She's writing her grocery list. That's the first mission.
Yeah, that's right. She's like, actually, she's having one of her 35 assistants write her grocery list for her.
Exactly.
One thing I love about Kind Green Planet and Vegan at Heart is that you're just so positive about everything you do and every program that you have. It's why I also love our hen house, because it's all such like happy, positive activism and happy, positive ways of getting involved. It's just such a supportive atmosphere, everything you're doing with Kind Green Planet. I mean, it's called Kind Green Planet. It's not called, like, Mean Hollow World.
So we know some days we sit there and we feel like it's a Mean Hollow World.
Well, it is actually in many ways a Mean Hollow World, but I think that what you're doing is making it a little bit brighter, so that's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you. So do you guys, just in your humor, you know that I've just broken out in spontaneous laughter on the subway, you know, at the farmer's market, wherever. Just listening to your sound effects. I hope you add a sound effect, please.
Oh, I'll add many. I'll go overboard with the sound effects for your interview, I promise.
Great.
I promise.
They're my favorite.
I forgot to mention this. I already told all of the millions of people who are listening that you are why I'm vegan. Well, you're also responsible for the fact that Marianne and I are Marianne and I in some very direct way.
I know. I get so excited when I hear indirect references to myself on your podcast.
It's awesome.
When you mention, when you mention stuff like that, because our lives are so intertwined. Yeah, because you guys totally kind of hooked up in our wedding.
Marianne put a long-stemmed rose down my cleavage.
Yeah, I still don't remember that part.
You did, babe. You did. She did.
TMI.
She did. And
it must have been some wedding.
It was. We danced the night away. But anyway, wow, this is going in a very interesting direction.
Us.
It's all about us.
It's
not about you.
The vegans.
We actually wanted you to come on our show to talk about us.
I'm happier doing that than talking about myself. You can talk about me and I can talk about
Let's ask you a personal question. Enough about this animal stuff. What is your favorite item of clothing in that closet of yours?
Okay. I know my favorite item of clothing. I got it at the Housing Works thrift store, and it looks like it's out of my mom's closet circa 1972. Mm-hmm. It's sort of lime green, and it has these little multicolored patterns on it, mm-hmm. and a belt around the waist, and these loopy, droopy, cool 70s sleeves.
That's awesome. Yeah, well, you're a hippie, that's why.
I am a hippie. In fact, I'm having a happy hippie birthday party potluck.
You're entering your mid-30s. I just entered my early
30s. Oh, don't say that. No, I'm proud. No, I just want to say, to plug veganism one more time, I actually do brag that I'm in my mid-30s, because when you go vegan, I believe your aging slows down tremendously. I don't know if it's the antioxidants. I don't know if it's the compassionate glow that you emit to the world, you irradiate to the world, but people who are vegan just look younger.
Yeah, go vegan for the animals, for your health, for the planet, and so that you will look younger. So, Marisa, thank you so much for joining us in our hen house. We're so excited about everything you're doing, and everyone can find you at kindgreenplanet.org or at veganatheart.org.
And I want to hear if your membership goes up dramatically, because you were both on Oprah.com and on our hen house.
That's
wow.
Right. And Oprah and our hen house in the same day. That's amazing.
That is amazing. No, I've had so much fun. It's always fun talking to you guys. Thanks for your awesome work. I love your show. I'm a dedicated listener.
Oh, good.
And I plug it wherever I go because I love it.
Well, thank you. Why don't we stay on and gossip?
Okay.
Thanks, Marisa.
Thanks, guys.
Marisa's very articulate. She always has amazing things to say.
Yeah, I think her advice is really valuable. I hope anyone who's listening who is a vegan at heart and not in practice will sign up for her program.
Or even knows a vegan at heart.
Yeah, it's a really great program. What a great concept she came up with.
It really is. So a few weeks ago, actually longer ago than that, we started a religion and spirituality series where we talked to a Buddhist who gave us his insight about how his own spiritual beliefs pertains to his animal rights. And we decided that from time to time, we were going to continue to bring people on who practice different religions or have various spiritual beliefs to talk about how their veganism and their animal activism directly pertains to their religion. And this week, we are being joined by Calla and Nick, and they are incredibly articulate about how their Christianity pertains to their animal activism. So let's talk.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. Let's talk to Calla and Nick. Calla Wright is from Cleveland, Ohio. She became a vegetarian when she was 4 years old out of concern for animals. Since that time, she has become increasingly more involved in the animal rights movement, writing persuasive essays against animal testing in middle school, volunteering regularly for animal protection organizations throughout college. She's been a strict vegan for just under 4 years and is currently studying for her MS in nonprofit management, with the intent to make a career in the animal protection movement upon graduation. Nicholas Lachetti was born in Queens, New York. He became interested in Christianity and other religions at the same time as he became a vegetarian about 3.5 years ago. He's now a vegan and a practicing Episcopalian and is pursuing his MA at Fordham University studying late antique religion. So welcome to our hen house, Calla and Nick.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So I thought that you guys were particularly interesting to come onto our series about religion and spirituality, because every time I talk to you about it, you just have so much passion and knowledge, and I always find it really interesting, and I find you guys totally inspiring. And obviously what I particularly love is how good you are at making the connections between your spirituality and animal issues. And Nick, you're actually in school for this right now? In school for religion? For your master's?
Yeah, I'm studying late antique religion at Fordham University.
What is antique religion, by the way?
It's basically the religion of the late Roman Empire. So people like Augustine, who's probably the most famous, Jerome, Ambrose, the people that are usually considered the church fathers and mothers.
And how do you both identify your religion?
I identify as Episcopalian, which is the Anglican Church in the United States.
Mm-hmm. I just identify as Protestant.
Mm-hmm. I guess we'll get right to the soy meat of the matter here.
Okay.
we all put together a few questions that you are commonly asked, and we sometimes get asked, but of course I'm like, you know, an atheist kind of Jew type-ish who knows absolutely not one thing about religion. Which
a Jew type-ish?
I don't know. See, Marianne could attest to the fact that I don't know anything about religion at all.
Jasmine doesn't know the difference between Catholic and Protestant.
I really don't. But people do sometimes, you know, when I'm giving a workshop or something, people will come in with their very specific religious belief, and they'll say things like, didn't God give us dominion
over animals. So what do you have to say to that?
I really hate the misconception that dominion means ruthless killing and torture, which is how a lot of people seem to interpret that verse, when actually, I mean, it's in the creation story in Genesis, so it's in the Hebrew scripture as well, where God creates the planet, and then he tells humans and animals, non-human animals alike, that they are to eat a plant-based diet. And immediately following that, he tells humans they have dominion over animals, meaning you have to take care of them. Because if the previous verse, whether you take this literally or figuratively, humans were prescribed a vegan diet. And directly following that is when he says, and you have dominion. So you can't interpret that as dominion to kill and slaughter and eat.
I would also add that the Bible was written in the context of governments that were monarchies. So dominion would really mean, you know, this monarch has dominion over his people. And, you know, it wouldn't be good for the monarch to be eating his people. I mean, that wouldn't be seen as a good monarch, you know. And more specifically in Christianity, if Jesus is God, considered by Christians to be God, to be the Lord, Jesus as sort of the monarch of creation, Jesus didn't eat his people either. Jesus died for his people, which is very different than the way people interpret the idea of dominion. Dominion interpreted in a Christian sense would have to mean self-sacrifice and love, not sort of abusing people.
Yeah, I mean, so it goes along with, if we're talking about Christ as, you know, the Lord of creation, there's also the metaphor as Christ as the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. The good shepherd doesn't ruthlessly kill and torture the sheep to eat and not really think about it.
Yeah, but doesn't the shepherd raise the sheep to eat them?
Not necessarily, in the sense that, I mean, sheep would also be used for wool in, you know, 2,000 years ago without necessarily being used for food. And not that that's necessarily the best use for sheep. They were created for their own purposes as well. But I just think the whole metaphor behind the good shepherd, whether or not sheep are raised to be eaten, is that while they're alive, you have to care for them and you lay down your own life for them. Like, they are valued higher than you are.
Which is a little bit different than factory farming today.
That metaphor also is sort of subverting the normal way to view what a shepherd does, I think, for that time period. I mean, this was a subversive comment. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the average shepherd probably wouldn't want to lay down his life for his sheep. I mean, the reason why that comment really had resonance is because it was saying, no, listen, the sheep are more important than you. You have to self-sacrifice in love for them. So
what about the big old standby, but didn't Jesus eat meat?
Yeah, the Last Supper. Wasn't there evidence that they served lamb at the Last Supper?
You know, the only evidence of Christ ever actually eating an animal, like, that it actually explicitly says, like, Christ ate an animal, was fish one time in the entire scripture. And, you know, granted, there may have been lamb at the Last Supper, as is tradition, but it doesn't explicitly state that there was. And also, we aren't called to dress the same way Jesus dressed or talk the same language he talked.
Wearing a sheet right now. I don't know what you're talking
And, I mean, 2,000 years ago in the Mediterranean, where you don't have access to everything we have access to now, I mean, there's a different standard that people may have had to be held to, but with modern-day factory farming and modern-day pollution and world hunger, there's just no excuse for it.
Did Jesus ever talk about animals?
Jesus spoke about a sparrow once, which has been used in different ways.
I love sparrows, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think that's as close to Jesus as I get, but I love sparrows.
Part of the idea was that this was about, the apostles were asking, you know, how much you love us. And Jesus said, God cares for the sparrows and the way that they fly. So, of course, God loves you. God numbers every hair on your head. So it's sort of in a general theme of God caring about every aspect of his creation down to the smallest detail. There's also the fact that I think going along with the lamb at Passover idea, I mean, it was Jewish custom and still is to have a lamb at Passover. So probably as Jews, the apostles and Jesus probably did eat a lamb. The thing about that is that Jesus is also considered the Lamb of God in Christian tradition, usually. And this is, I mean, a metaphor that comes up in the Gospels. And part of the idea is that, you know, this was Jewish custom was the law, but part of the idea of Christ was that Christ is sort of ending that idea for Christians. So instead of the lamb dying for the people, Jesus sacrificed himself in love for the people. This would end the need for those sacrifices. So in a sense, I mean, on the face of it, it seems like, oh, he ate this animal. I mean, that's very sort of direct, like in this verse. But if you look at it, the overall arc of the idea of these things, these stories, I think that the message is actually different.
What about the story of the money changers and the sacrifice? Do you find meaning in that? When he threw the money changers out of the temple? Do you find an anti-sacrificial theme in that?
Yeah, I think there's a few ways to read that. So I've actually seen people use that as an argument opposed to animal rights, because Jesus apparently made a cord of whips and then used it to drive the money changers and their oxen out. So people are saying, oh, he must have whipped the oxen, therefore he hated animals. But in actuality, I think that does sort of go along with the general idea that they had made sort of the temple courtyard into a marketplace to sell sort of doves and other animals for sacrifices. And Jesus was saying, no, listen, this is not sort of the purpose of that. You're just making money out of these creatures. You're using the sacrificial system just to make money, to make profit, and you're losing the point of it. Which is why, I mean, Cal wanted to talk about this.
About animal sacrifices in general in the Hebrew Testament, like, were tradition in Christ's time 2,000 years ago. You know, there's a lot of scholars who look at the Hebrew scriptures and look at the animal sacrifices and point to the fact that there's nowhere in the Hebrew scriptures that God actually commands animal sacrifice. There's just instructions to do it, as in he'll accept it, but it's not required. And if you look at the customs of all the people at that time, a lot of pagan religions and all the religions at that time were sacrificing animals, it would make sense that it would become part of Jewish tradition as well. But in the Hebrew Testament and in the New Testament, there's a lot of verses that try to subvert this idea of animal sacrifice as having never been important. Even in Isaiah, it talks about how I did not want your sacrifice.
God says that.
Yeah, God says, I did not want your sacrifice. I just wanted your devotion. And in the New Testament, you wrote a paper on this once. What was the Hebrews?
part of the idea of the book of Hebrews in the New Testament is that the sacrifices never really got rid of sin. I mean, part of the idea was that if you sacrifice this animal, your sins were forgiven. Part of the new Christian idea was that, no, this never really worked that way. It had to do with your devotion, not what you were doing.
Well, speaking of sinning, how do you respond when people ask you if you think that people who eat meat are sinning?
I think that in modern day developed countries, you cannot in good conscience eat an animal. I think that there are too many alternatives that you don't need to create death just for your appetite, that it, number one cause of anthropocentric greenhouse gas emissions, according to both the UN and the World Watch Institute. There's evidence of vast pollution in communities. There's evidence of it contributing to world hunger. There's workers' rights issues in the factory. And this is all in addition to the horrendous conditions modern-day confined animals are subject to. And so I feel that in good conscience as a Christian, even if you're a speciesist, which I personally am not, but there's a lot of Christians who take that dominion argument to mean they're able to hold humans higher than other non-human animals, even as a speciesist, with the pollution and the workers' rights and the greenhouse gas emissions, you are not properly looking after God's creation and being a good steward of the earth if you're eating meat.
Yeah, I actually was thinking that in Jesus' time, they didn't have seitan piccata. So if the shepherd was raising the sheep for food, then it was probably a little bit different of a grocery store situation. Not that that would excuse it, but, you know, still.
Yeah.
So let's talk about religious outreach a little bit, because I know it's something that we've talked about, Calla, and I think that it's such an important key for spreading veganism to different churches. Have either of you had any experience with with advocating for veganism in the church community?
Not, like, officially in any sense. Like, I haven't, you know, held a meeting and given a presentation or anything like that. But, I mean, I've been able to have conversations with some people, and I also have literature from the Christian Vegetarian Association that I'm occasionally able to hand out to people.
Yeah, I hear they're a really good resource. What's their website?
ChristianVeg.com. If you type that in, it turns into some other website, but you can type that in, and it'll lead you there. You know, and they have a lot of, if you have more specific questions about a specific Bible verse where it seems to be condoning eating meat, they have answers to all those questions on there as well. But you can request free literature from them if you are trying to target specific groups. Like, they'll give them to you, especially if there's an upcoming Christian concert or festival or conference that you know is happening in your area. You can request literature from them and just go leaflet at that event, which I have done one time. And so it's definitely an excellent resource.
Why do you think that organized religion hasn't confronted this issue really in any significant way?
I know that Pope Benedict XVI, who we definitely don't agree with on many issues, actually has spoken out against factory farming. So there's a certain awareness, but it's definitely true that a lot of people, when sort of confronted with these sort of issues that would force them to give up something they're used to that they like, they'll try to, like, turn to the Bible, or really not just the Bible because it's their religion, but because it holds a certain authority for them. They'll try to find something in it that says, oh, you know, this means that I can eat meat. Jesus ate the fish. That means I can eat meat. I think people sort of try to grasp onto any of those sorts of things when they're confronted with stuff that they don't want to hear and sort of use it to sort of make them feel better. So I couldn't speak about other organized religions, but I definitely think in Christianity there's sort of a resistance to wanting to read the Bible as a sort of longer view rather than little specific verses that would say, oh, maybe it is okay to eat meat.
Yeah, I feel like people take a lot of things out of context that are in the scriptures, not just with eating animals, with a lot of oppressive movements people turned. It was used to uphold slavery. It's being used now to say that queer people shouldn't be allowed to get married. You know, it's, people can take anything out of context. And I feel like animal rights, for some reason, is a very dangerous topic that people don't want to touch because it's not politically correct to tell someone they can't have their hamburger. And I personally can't understand why that is, but people want to stay away from touchy issues if they want to bring people into their church. So I think that might be part of it.
Yeah, it just always seems so surprising. I mean, religious people are people who care about ethics.
Yeah,
and they're not being asked to confront this issue or even think about it, really. And it even seems like the organized religions, to a large extent, play into this whole idea, well, it's about humans, you know, we have to care about humans. You should care about humans, not animals.
They're setting it up as an either-or proposition.
Right, and I think that that's where the problem lies, and that's why, you know, organizations like the Christian Vegetarian Association, and I know there's one that's a Catholic Vegetarian Association and a Jewish one as well, but I'm not really as familiar with what they do. But I just feel like that's why these organizations are so important to bring back to people's attention that God didn't, if you believe in a God who's creator of the earth, you believe in a God who's creator of the earth, not creator of humans, and then the rest of the earth is just a blob that sprung into existence. So why would you not believe that you have to care for all creation? Like, I agree with you that it's absurd, and I can't really wrap my head around it.
I know when I used to, I was brought up Catholic, and I always used to be taught that humans have a soul and animals don't.
Oh no. So there's a book written by Richard Allen Young called Is God a Vegetarian? And the problem that a lot of us have when reading the Bible is that it was written in Hebrew and Greek, and how many of us really speak Hebrew and Greek? We're reading it in...
No, I'm just kidding.
We're reading it in translation, and Richard Allen Young points to a certain word that is often translated as soul. And I guess there's a lot of different Greek and Hebrew words that are all translated as soul. Some of these words, I don't remember what the word is.
Nefesh.
Nefesh, yeah. Is also applied to animals. So when you actually read these books in their native like language without translation, animals have a soul or humans don't.
Yeah, people like to rationalize. They like to come up with absolutely anything they can, especially when it comes to religion.
I always liked your response to that, too, though. I'd never heard that very much more intelligent and sophisticated response. But somebody who said that maybe humans have an immortal soul and animals don't, but that means that all animals will ever have is the life they have here on this earth. So
that's kind
what
of
right
bleak.
Do we have to take it away from them?
Well, I mean, there's also visions of heaven where it's all creation around God. So there's that too.
You guys are fascinating. Do you just like sit around with a glass of Chardonnay and talk about like religion?
not actually Chardonnay, but yeah.
Sort of. And I'm on the quantum wellness cleanse right now, so no Chardonnay.
You are. Wow. Well, the animals are lucky to have you because you are doing great things with advocating for veganism and just somehow making sense of everything, even to someone as green and naive as me when it comes to these issues. So thank you so much for coming to our hen house and for sharing your expertise with us, and your passion just really shines through. We really appreciate everything that you're doing.
Thanks for having us.
I remember the other day when you said that religion was your favorite topic.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I do find it a very fascinating thing to talk about.
It's funny since you're kind of atheist-y.
Well, kind of. I don't know what I am. I'm willing to live in the mystery. I have no idea what the hell we're doing here. But I do find religion a fascinating topic.
Especially when we talk about how it pertains to animal rights and veganism. And Calla and Nick just have this way of making it totally accessible. And they're really smart, smart people. I found them completely fascinating.
Yeah, that was a very entertaining conversation.
Well, aside from all of the world's religions, and we'll have to get a few more world's religions represented here on our hen house.
Yeah, it's kind of an unlimited amount. We should be able to cover, I mean, especially if we go for the, small religions.
But aside from those, there's a lot going on in the land of news. So let's get into some news now, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot going on.
So when you were at work the other day, there were all of these helicopters, and I went to take Rose out for a walk.
Yeah, I missed this whole big animal event right near our apartment.
So I was walking Rose, and I heard these people say, "Be careful of the coyote." And I was like, what the hell are they talking about? And then I walk a little bit further. Suddenly, everyone on Thompson Street was incredibly friendly. And this woman said, "Did you hear there's a coyote on Canal Street?" And unfortunately, I think Rose's walk might have gotten cut a little bit short that day because I went home fairly immediately to see what the heck they were talking about. And as I was going home, there was all these helicopters above me. And
I can't imagine why they would have helicopters.
Because they couldn't find this coyote. There was a coyote wild in Soho, where we live, and in Tribeca, which is just a few blocks away from us, for 24 hours. And it caught, like, national news, this coyote. I guess it was
a
slow news
day. Well, it is kind of amazing. I mean, it's not just that it's incredibly urban right around here. It's incredibly urban for miles and miles and miles and miles around here.
Apparently,
there's just no country anywhere near New York City.
And the coyote had been spotted in the Holland Tunnel also.
That's just terrifying.
Yeah.
Also, Canal Street, for those who don't know New York City, I mean, is a huge, incredibly busy, heavily trafficked thoroughfare. I can't imagine what a coyote would do. How did it end up here?
Well, it's unclear, but there's been all of these coyote sightings in New York City as of late. There was one in Chelsea fairly recently, and there was another one as well. There was one in the Bronx. There's all these animals in the Bronx running around.
I'm originally from the Bronx myself.
You are an animal from the Bronx as well. But anyway, so this coyote, the day that I heard that she was out and about, I found this footage. They had caught her at one point. They had cornered her like under a car.
Oh my God, it just makes me want to cry.
It would make you want to cry even more if you saw her little face. She looked absolutely terrified. And then she darted away and they lost her. And of course, it was like this really funny story on the news. And I was just,
I mean, from her perspective, she must have been terrified. And the latest news is that they did catch her, and she is a she, in fact, and they brought her to
Anna. I apologize for calling her an it earlier in the broadcast.
You're going to get hate mail.
I didn't know.
Well, now she is a she, and she's about 30 pounds, which is a lot less than Rose, I might add.
That's tiny. Is that a normal weight for a coyote, or was she incredibly emaciated?
None of the reports that I read said that she was emaciated. I'm not that familiar with the normal sizage of coyotes, but she didn't look particularly small to me, but what do I know? I mean, I'm an urbanite, like the coyote. So they did get her, and she's at the animal care and control, and she's being released to a rehab sanctuary. Now, here's the weirdest thing. They won't release the name of the sanctuary that she's being sent to, but it said that by law, it has to be within the 5 boroughs of New York City.
Well, what kind of sanctuaries are there within the 5 boroughs of New York City?
I have no idea. I'm completely perplexed by this.
Well, I hope she's okay.
Me too.
Coyotes are just such amazing animals, and they're, of course, like, very loathed and hated because they survive so well in the presence of humans. We hate all the animals that do well around us.
Ay vey. So there's been some stuff going on the television machine.
Yeah, a lot of television news all of a sudden. National Geographic is bringing a new channel. I think it's actually been available in other countries, but they're bringing it to the United States. It's called Wild.
Wild.
I had originally thought when I heard the name, or when I heard that they were starting a channel that was said to be competing with Animal Planet, that it would be somewhat more broad-based in its coverage of animal issues. But it does seem like it's going to be completely about wild animals. So I guess that's stuff that a lot of people find very interesting, and I hope they have some good stuff. A lot of times some of that stuff ends up feeling kind of exploitative to me.
Right. That's what I was just about to ask you. Like, sometimes they will show animals, dangerous animals who are out to get humans, and they seem to just have, like, canned situations where something's going to go wrong. It just makes me feel icky.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how much of that bad stuff still goes on, because I don't really watch a lot of those kind of shows. But if it brings really beautiful footage of amazing wild animals and brings to people's attention what danger they're in and how close we are to losing so many of them, I guess it's a really good thing.
Also in the land of television, the film Food Inc., which was just nominated for Best Documentary for the Academy Awards, is coming to PBS on April 21st, which is a whole new audience for that film.
Yeah, that's really good news. I hope that will help it reach a huge audience, which it should. And another television-related news item, PETA brought to my attention the fact that Mike Tyson is being featured in a new program on Animal Planet, and all of a sudden, already, one is shuddering about what that could be about. And it's about pigeon racing, which didn't sound that bad, but PETA made clear that it is pretty bad. Pigeon racing is apparently very, very cruel, and the pigeons are taken up to 500 miles away from the place they're expected to return to, and a lot of them don't make it. And also, pigeons mate for life, like as many birds do, and their relationships can be very disruptive. So actually, PETA, I think this is pretty hilarious. PETA has asked the Brooklyn DA's office to look into it, and apparently they are. They're investigating to see if this involves violations of New York State law.
Wow. Well, that's our news. So Passover's coming up.
Yes, as well as Easter, but we're going to focus on Passover tonight.
Okay, can we hear it for the Jews, like, for once?
Go Jews.
We just did this whole thing about Christianity. Let's talk about
That's
Passover.
That's true. I want my equal time.
Yeah, so Passover's coming up. We're going to 2 Seders, one at a friend of ours' his house, and one at my mom's house. And for the one at our friend's...
Both vegan, right, I might add.
Right.
How cool
vegan.
Are we?
That's so funny that I didn't even think about that. I was like, obviously it's vegan.
I think we're very lucky to be going to 2 vegan seders.
So we got the opportunity to bust out my favorite ever cookbook ever.
I hope Issa's not listening.
Aside from Issa's, if you're listening, Issa. The low-fat Jewish vegetarian cookbook.
It is a hell of a cookbook.
It's all vegan.
It's so easy. The recipes are so easy. That's what I was going to say.
Most of the recipes have a total of 5 ingredients. Now, you talk about it while I look in the book for my favorite recipe in it, which is that pate.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to talk about, was the vegan chopped liver. Oh, my God. It's, like, so easy to make.
Yeah.
And it has totally healthy ingredients.
And I've become...
It doesn't have anything in it that's bad for you. It doesn't have anything in it that's health, right. That's not healthy.
I've become
or
famous.
Or that's fattening.
I've become basically famous to both of our families for it.
I know. We can't go to any event without somebody saying, well, could you bring that pate?
Right, exactly. Well, here it is. It's called mock chopped liver. And it says, this is an excellent vegetarian alternative to chopped liver. And the ingredients are green beans, mushrooms, an onion, 1 teaspoon oil, 1/4 cup walnuts, salt and pepper, and water.
I know it doesn't sound good. It's so delicious.
It's the most amazing
food. And it is actually reminiscent of chopped liver, but not in a gross meat kind of way.
It's truly amazing. And something about that combination of vegetables is so completely delicious. So I really think that people should go out and buy the low-fat Jewish vegetarian cookbook.
And they should also buy the video that we bought for your grandmother.
Actually,
it kind of goes with the cookbook.
But before you tell about the video, tell the story about how you got the video in the first place.
I just happened to duck into a Judaica store because I had time to kill before an appointment.
And it was right there.
I was looking around, and lo and behold, I find on the shelf a DVD called No Schmaltz.
No Schmaltz.
And it's a vegan cooking Jewish video in Yiddish.
So with translation. So the two people who are starring in it, they're like Yiddish stars. And they start talking in Yiddish and then randomly start singing, remember?
Yes, they were wonderful. I think she had been like a
big star,
in the Yiddish musical theater.
And so
they're like cooking away and making jokes, which you're translated, and then all of a sudden she's going, vai, vai, dai, 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 vai,
so wait, but here's an example of one of the songs. This is my take on it. This is the translation, obviously, because the only Yiddish I know how to say is gay kakana fumiyam de kalyeka, which means go shit in the ocean, you helpless person.
We're supposed to be watching our language.
Oh, fuck, I forgot. So anyway, this is my interpretation of it, okay? It goes like this. What are you doing? You're going to burn the toast. 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 Oy vey. Right? And so we bought this and we showed it to my grandmother, and it didn't come with the book. We found out about the book, which apparently has been around for a really long time afterwards.
Yeah, I think they're available through the Vegetarian Resource Group.
Yeah, the Vegetarian Resource Group, which is a really amazing organization that does some amazing work with finding out statistics about
and
vegans.
And it's mostly all in English, not Yiddish.
What is?
The Vegetarian Resource Group's work. It's their only Yiddish word.
This is their
the cookbook is not in Yiddish.
No.
It's in English.
It's amazing. So that was our review, and make the pate, and we also...
Even if you're not Jewish.
So wait, I told you the one thing
An old commercial for Levi's Jewish Rye?
Yeah, it was. Wait, so I told you that one sentence I know in Yiddish, but here's... So I told you, go shit in the ocean, you helpless person. Here's another one. Gehen dreds.
What does that mean?
It means go to hell. And my grandmother taught...
Do you know how to say anything nice in Yiddish?
My grandmother taught me all of this. Here, I know a few other things. Ech libedech mein baba.
That's a nice one. I
love you, my grandma.
She taught you that?
Mm-hmm. And she also taught me, how are you? Ech ben besa, echab gevenachet. It means I've been better, I've been worse.
Oh, that sounds very Jewish.
Yep. Mm-hmm. My grandmother's amazing. I kind of want to have her on our podcast. But
I know. Your grandmother is my
favorite person. What can she talk about? I feel like we need to come up with something for her to talk about. We'll think about it. We'll figure it out.
We'll work on that.
So I think that is it. If people are celebrating Passover or Easter, then...
Good Pesach.
And happy Easter. And I hope that you...
Did you know that Easter, the word Easter, is derived from the dramatic word, the same root as estrogen?
Really?
Yes. It's not a Christian word. It's left over from a Germanic goddess. She was the goddess of fertility. And I find it so surprising they didn't get rid of the word Easter and change it to, you know, in all
estrogen.
Of the other countries.
It's, happy estrogen.
It's the Paschal Feast.
The Paschal Feast.
Which is a refers to the lamb, I think, which is an actual Christian reference. But in English, it's date Easter.
Well, I hope that you enjoy whatever you're going to do next week, today,
Christian,
whatever.
Christian, Jewish, pagan, whatever.
I'm kind of all of the above, actually. No, I'm more like an agnostic, atheist, Jewish-ish person. That's enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of me? Tell me at jasmine@ourhenhouse.com or email us at info@ourhenhouse.com. Please visit our website at ourhenhouse.com. Please become our Facebook fan. We love our Facebook fans. We are totally radically obsessed with Facebook fan, and we're radicals, so that works. And I hope to see you or hear you or have you hear us next week on Our Hen House. Bye.